Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 249, side 2, entitled Bushwhacked, More About the Political Heritage of George W. Bush. In the preceding side, we concluded with a book called The Franklin Cover-Up by John W. DeCamp. That is certainly not a book that one could accuse of being part of the liberal media, and has some very serious allegations about the Bush milieu. That investigation, which uncovered indications of ritualistic child abuse and a number of other very sordid activities connected to the highest ranks of the Republican Party and, in turn, the intelligence community, that investigation began with an investigation by the authorities into the collapse of the Franklin Credit Union. And that, in turn, that institution had been systematically looted and was, in turn, part of the financial looting that took place under the savings and loan scandal. Miscellaneous archive show M43, recorded in the spring of 1990, documented the intelligence community and CIA connection to the savings and loan scandal and the looting of some of the SNLs in conjunction with the financing of the Contra War. Note that former CIA director and then Vice President George Bush was chairman of the Vice President's Task Force on Financial Deregulation that opened the door for the lootings of the savings and loans. He also was chairman of the South Florida Anti-Drug Task Force, under which some of the activities appear to have been conducted. And he was also the head of the Vice President's Task Force on Combating Terrorism. That basically put him in a position to organize the networks that the Iran-Contra and Iraqgate affairs were conducted through. We've looked at that in past broadcasts. What we're going to take a look at now is the collapse of the Silverado savings and loan, and we're going to take a look at the March 18th. We're going to listen to an excerpt, I should say, of the March 18th, 1990 One Step Beyond show. This is part of Miscellaneous Archive Show M43, the CIA and the Savings and Loan Scandal. Now, this first Houston Post article is from the Houston Post of February 4th, 1990. It's again by Pete Bruton, copyright 1990 by the Houston Post, and it's headlined, Evidence Finds CIA Operatives May Be Implicated in Failure of 22 SNLs. And the article reads in part as follows. Evidence related to the nation's savings and loan crisis suggests a possible link between the Central Intelligence Agency and organized crime in the failure of at least 22 thrifts, including 16 in Texas. The Houston Post, during an 8-month investigation into the role of fraud in SNL failures, has found numerous links between organized crime figures and CIA operatives, including some involved in gun running, drug smuggling, money laundering, and covert aid to the Nicaraguan Contras. The evidence obtained by the Post from court documents, sworn testimony, law enforcement records, and interviews with key government investigators and prosecutors suggests that the CIA may have used part of the proceeds from SNL fraud to help pay for covert operations and other activities that Congress was unwilling to support publicly. The CIA denied that the agency has used savings and loans to fund covert activities. Quote, That would be a violation of U.S. laws, and we do not violate U.S. laws, said CIA spokesman Mark Mansfield. The Post, however, found evidence that the CIA has intervened in criminal investigations involving agency operatives accused of SNL fraud and may be at least partially responsible for the fact that a substantial amount of suspected fraud has gone unprosecuted. Lloyd Monroe, a former prosecutor with the Justice Department's Organized Crime Strike Force, said the federal agencies responsible for investigating SNL fraud are not in the, quote, position to investigate wrongdoing and are being precluded from investigating wrongdoing that is possibly being conducted in the name of national security, unquote. Monroe, now a fellow at Brown University, asked rhetorically, quote, How do you expect the government to investigate itself? Richard Brennecke, a former CIA contract agent, testified in September of 1988 during a federal court trial in Denver that the CIA had set up a systematic program to raise money for the Contras. Support for the Contras became a point of controversy in 1984 when the Democratic-controlled Congress cut off aid to the Contras after revelations that the CIA had helped mine Nicaraguan harbors. Yet there were allegations that CIA aid continued despite the ban. The late William Casey, then director of the CIA, and Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, then a White House aide, had wanted to set up self-sustaining operations that would not be dependent on Congress for approval and funding. One of these was the program to sell arms to Iran and divert the profits to the Contras, a scheme that led to North's resignation and subsequent prosecution for his role in the affair. Brennecke said the CIA effort to raise money for covert operations involved a number of schemes to siphon funds from financial institutions, quote, at the expense of an insurance company, unquote, meaning the Federal Deposit Insurance Program. After the trial, Brennecke told the Post that the banking and SNL officials involved in such schemes were required to sign secrecy agreements, quote unquote, with the CIA. The Post in 1988 reported that a number of failed Texas SNLs had connections to reputed organized crime figures Mario Renda, R-E-N-D-A, and Herman K. Beebe, B-E-E-B-E, or perhaps Beebe, I don't know how that's pronounced, who both later pleaded guilty to bank fraud in separate cases. That last sentence again. The Post in 1988 reported that a number of failed Texas SNLs had connections to reputed organized crime figures Mario Renda and Herman K. Beebe, who both later pleaded guilty to bank fraud in separate cases. Since then, the Post has found possible links between the CIA and SNL fraud, as well as additional evidence of connections between organized crime figures and failed thrifts. The 22 collapsed SNLs not only include large institutions such as Mainland Savings in Houston and Sunbelt Savings in Dallas, but tiny thrifts such as Vision Bank Savings in Kingsville. In each case, the institution made substantial loans to people with links to organized crime, the CIA, or both. 18 of the 22 were either owned or controlled by people with links to organized crime, the CIA, or both. And in each institution's failure, fraud was a key factor. All told, their demise could eventually cost taxpayers an estimated $13 billion to cover federally insured deposits. Monroe, who successfully prosecuted Renda in Kansas City, said although he is convinced the CIA either masterminded or condoned a certain amount of SNL fraud, proving it would be extremely difficult. To get to the bottom of it would take 10 times the effort, unquote, it took to put Renda behind bars, Monroe said. It's like trying to grab smoke, said Bruce Maffeo, M-A-F-F-E-O, former special prosecutor with the Justice Department's Organized Crime Strike Force in Brooklyn. Congress has done little to spotlight the full scope of SNL fraud, with the possible exception of the House Banking Committee under U.S. Representative Henry B. Gonzalez, Democrat of Texas. His committee has been investigating Charles Keating and the failure of his Lincoln Savings in California. Skipping down. As matters now stand, Monroe said, CIA and high government officials who might have had ties to people involved in SNL fraud can maintain the facade of plausible deniability, unquote, that they ordered or condoned anything improper. At the same time, Monroe said, the CIA knows that these people are going to use their financial institutions for CIA purposes and are going to come to the CIA when they get in trouble, unquote. That next-to-last paragraph again. As matters now stand, Monroe said, CIA and high government officials who might have had ties to people involved in SNL fraud can maintain the facade of plausible deniability, quote-unquote, that they ordered or condoned anything improper. The whole question here of connections to people who are very important, connections to some of the high movers and shakers, is front and center. Now, remember the Mainland Savings Bank in Houston? That was one of the larger of the SNLs that failed, allegedly due to combined CIA and organized crime influence. Also remember the name Mario Renda, R-E-N-D-A. He's one of the people implicated in the failure of the Mainland Savings Bank. He is also going to be one of the main people implicated in the failure of the Indian River State Savings Bank, although that's not one of the banks on the list here that is provided in this first February 4th, 1990 article by the Houston Post. However, in addition to Mainland Savings, this first article is significant because they have the list of the 22 banks, and number 22, and the bank which had the third largest assets of all of the 22 and which will cost the United States cost the U.S. taxpayer the third highest amount, is the Silverado Savings and Loan of Denver, Colorado. Now, I'm not going to go into articles about the Silverado Savings and Loan on this particular broadcast. There have been a lot of articles in the mainstream daily press. Not a lot of articles, but it's It's possible to find articles in the mainstream press about the Silverado Savings and Loan, and the key name here is Neil Bush, George Bush's son. Neil Bush is a director of the Silverado Savings and Loan, and according to most accounts, he helped approve the loans which ultimately brought Silverado down. Now, ultimately, whether or not some of the Neil Bush-approved loans that helped bring Silverado down turn out to be connected to the allegations connected or listed here or set forth in the Houston Post concerning CIA SNL fraud connections, well, that remains to be seen. That excerpted from the March 18th, 1990 One Step Beyond show, and in turn, the M43, the CIA and the Savings and Loan Scandal. A subsequent book by Pete Bruton that came out in 1992 confirmed many of the investigative pathways that he had engaged in working for the Houston Post, and later on in that same broadcast, again the March 18th, 1990 installment of M43, the name of Neil Bush cropped up in connection with another Denver-related case that also appears to have overlapped the milieu of Contra-related drug smuggling in connection with the Contra War, and that was the Sunflow case. That article was excerpted later on in the March 18th, 1990 installment of M43, and we're going to listen to a short description of that particular article. Research credit on this also goes to a listener. This comes from a publication called Westward, which is described as Denver's News and Arts Weekly. It's a publication which I assume is very much like the Metro, the San Jose Metro, in scope and function. And the cover story on the Westward issue of July 13th through July 19th of 1988 is called George Bush's Drug Problem. It's subheaded, How a Convicted Colorado Drug Dealer Won Friends and Influenced People in Very High Places. The author is Brian Abbas, A-B-A-S. Now, this particular case involves the Sunflow case, and it's a long article. We haven't got time to read more than a few sections of it. I'm going to outline the Sunflow case briefly. We've gone into this in the past. Now, in a nutshell, Sunflow was a company that was started allegedly to market dehydrators for the third world. These basically were machines that would allegedly dehydrate produce so that it could then be gotten to market without deteriorating. This supposedly would greatly enhance the agricultural production and resulting nutrition of third world nations, alleviating much of the hunger in some of these countries, basically to help alleviate starvation in the third world. That was the stated goal. In fact, the main person involved with the Sunflow company, the individual who basically ran Sunflow, a fellow named Marcello Cabus, or Cabus, C-A-B-U-S, appears to have used the company as a front for drug smuggling activities, and there are some indications that those drug smuggling activities, once again, may be involved with the intelligence community and or the Contra supply effort. And again, some of the same names that we've seen brought up in the Christic Institute suit have been raised in connection with aspects of Sunflow. Now, the main names in Sunflow are this, and again, that's a company to market, allegedly put together to market these dehydrators in the third world, thereby allegedly alleviating third world starvation to a certain extent. In fact, the company appears to have been used as a drug smuggling front. Marcello Cabus is the person who ran Sunflow. He's the main man here, C-A-B-U-S. Also, a very important individual, a black Republican from Washington, D.C., named Arthur Fletcher. He's a person we're going to talk about later on in the broadcast as well. Fletcher accompanied George Bush, then vice president, on a trip to Africa in 1982. It was on this trip that Arthur Fletcher helped to promote Sunflow. Another name brought up in connection with Sunflow is Neil Bush. George Bush's name obviously crops up in connection with it, since it was on a George Bush diplomatic mission to Africa that Arthur Fletcher basically promoted Sunflow in the first place. Also, the name of Adolf Coors III, part of the very influential and conservative Coors family of California, of Colorado, the beer magnates, I guess you could say. Adolf Coors III has also been connected with Sunflow's operations. So the main names here that we want to be looking at are George and Neil Bush, Arthur Fletcher, the Coors family, specifically Adolf Coors III, and Marcello Cabus, or Cabus. I've never heard it spoken aloud. And again, bear in mind that these operations, these drug smuggling operations by, or allegations of drug smuggling by Sunflow, have in turn been connected by a number of people to some of the same operations that we've been talking about in connection with the Contra Support effort, and specifically drug smuggling on behalf of Contra Support. Now, the question that I'm asking here is whether or not we're going to see connections, whether we will see connections between the Sunflow case and the Silverado savings and loan. Both take place in Colorado. Neil Bush's name has cropped up in connection with both. And with the possibilities of Contra-related drug smuggling here in the Sunflow case, I think this is a worthwhile question to ask. One which, again, I think if it could be answered in the affirmative, we're not likely to see the answer cropping up in the major American news media. So far, only the Westword publication that I am aware of, anyway, has covered the Sunflow case. But it's a very important case, potentially explosive, and we're going to go into it right now. Again, from Westword, July 13th through July 19th of 1988. And actually, Abbas on the inside calls this article Dealer's Choice. A Colorado invention was supposed to stop world hunger, but instead it left investors high and dry. That again from M43, the CIA and the Savings and Loan Connection. Note in passing that the name of Neil Bush also crops up, and as well as the name of George Bush Sr., also crop up in connection with the shooting of Ronald Reagan. Neil Bush was scheduled to have dinner with Scott Hinckley, John Hinckley Jr.'s older brother, and the son of John Hinckley Sr., one of George Bush's key primary campaign contributors, and also an individual who had been working for World Vision, a Christian missionary organization that had allegedly been used as an intelligence front by CIA and others in Latin America and Southeast Asia. In connection with the Contra Support effort, in addition, obviously, to George Herbert Walker Bush, as we've seen in the past, and possibly in connection with the name of Neil Bush, the name of Jeb Bush, the governor of Florida and the brother of George W., also surfaces, that again in connection with the Contra Support effort. What we're going to excerpt now is RFA 37, How the United States Lost the Second World War. This is the October 11th, 1992 installment of SAME. What we're going to look at next is the role of Jeb Bush, George Bush's son, as a liaison person, basically, to the anti-Castro Cuban exile and some of these same forces as they function in connection with the Iran-Contra scandal, specifically the Contra support effort. For this information, we're going to turn to Covert Action Information Bulletins issue number 41 from the summer of 1992. Specifically, we're going to take a look at an article called The Family That Prays Together, and that's spelled P-R-E-Y. This is authored by Jack Colhoun, C-O-L-H-O-U-N, who is described. Jack Colhoun is the Washington correspondent for the New York Guardian Newsweekly. He has a Ph.D. in U.S. history, specializing in post-World War II foreign and military policy. And of Jeb Bush's role as George Bush's liaison to the what he calls here, that is to say Calhoun, calls the anti-Castro right, Calhoun writes as follows. George Herbert Walker Bush's second eldest son, John Ellis, or Jeb, was also linked to clandestine schemes in support of the Contras. Soon after congressional prohibition in late 1984, Jeb helped put a right-wing Guatemalan politician, Dr. Mario Castejon, C-A-S-T-E-J-O-N, in touch with Oliver North. Jeb acted as the Reagan administration's unofficial link with the Contras and Nicaraguan exiles in Miami. Jeb was contacted in February of 1985 by a friend of Castejon, who gave him a letter from Castejon to be passed on to then-Vice President Bush. In his letter, Castejon, a pediatrician and later an unsuccessful National Conservative Party presidential candidate, requested a meeting with George Bush to discuss a proposed medical aid project for the Contras. Jeb forwarded the letter to his father. In a March 3, 1985 letter, Vice President Bush expressed interest in Castejon's proposal to create an international medical brigade. Quote, I might suggest, if you are willing, that you consider meeting with Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North of the President's National Security Council staff at a time that would be convenient for you, unquote, Bush wrote. Again quoting, My staff has been in contact with Lieutenant Colonel North concerning your projects, and I know that he would be most happy to see you. You may feel free to make arrangements to see Lieutenant Colonel North if you wish, by corresponding directly with him at the White House, or by contacting Philip Hughes of my staff. Interrupting, do you think George Bush was, quote, out of the loop, unquote, as he maintains? This last couple of sentences again. I might suggest, if you are willing, that you consider meeting with Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North of the President's National Security Council staff at a time that would be convenient for you, unquote, Bush wrote. Again, quoting, my staff has been in contact with Lieutenant Colonel North concerning your projects, and I know that he would be most happy to see you. You may feel free to make arrangements to see Lieutenant Colonel North if you wish, by corresponding directly with him at the White House or by contacting Philip Hughes of my staff, unquote. Castellón later met with North in the White House, where he also saw President Ronald Reagan. When Castellón returned to Washington for a second visit, he was introduced to members of North's secret Contra support network, including retired Major General John Singlaub and Contra leader Adolfo Carrero, Castellón also met with a group of doctors working with Rob Owen, North's liaison to the Contras. Quote, he, Castellón, by the way, it's C-A-S-T-E-J-O-N, was offering us a pipeline into Guatemala, unquote, said Henry Whaley, W-H-A-L-E-Y, a former arms dealer, who said he was asked by his intelligence community connections to help Castellón. Whaley was optimistic about opening a new shipping route to the Contras through Guatemala. Quote, if you can move Band-Aids, unquote, he reportedly said, you can move bullets, unquote. With Castellón, Whaley prepared a proposal to the State Department for the purchase of medical supplies for the Contras from the department's newly established Nicaraguan Humanitarian Assistance Office. The document included requests for mobile field hospitals and light aircraft to evacuate wounded Contra guerrillas. Congress approved $27 million in humanitarian aid to the Contras in 1985. The Castellón proposal was hand-delivered to TGS International Limited in the Virginia suburbs of Washington. Whaley said he sent the report to TGS so it would be, quote, quietly, unquote, forwarded to the CIA. TGS International is owned by Ted Shackley, who was CIA Associate Deputy Director of Operations when Bush Sr. headed the agency in 1976 and 7. Recall, of course, he was also the head of the JM Wave operation, and along with Thomas Kleins, one of the people involved with the Turple Wilson operations around the world. Continuing. And by the way, of course, he was also involved with the Iran-Contra scandal. Jeb had another Contra connection in his involvement with Miguel Riqueri Jr., a right-wing Cuban who headed the International Medical Centers, or IMC, in Miami in 1985 and 1986. Riqueri and his associates gave more than $25,000 in contributions to political action committees controlled by then-Vice President Bush. In 1986, Riqueri hired Jeb, a real estate developer, to find a new headquarters for IMC. Jeb was paid a $75,000 fee, even though he never located a new building. In September of 1984, 2 months after IMC's $2,000 contribution to the Dade County Republican Party, which was headed by Jeb, the vice president's son contacted several top HHS, Department of Health and Human Services, officials on behalf of IMC. Quote, contrary to rumors, Riqueri was a good community citizen and a good supporter of the Republican Party, unquote, one official of the HHC remembered Jeb telling him in late 1984. Jeb successfully sought an HHS waiver of a rule so that IMC could receive more than 50% of its income from Medicare. Leon Weinstein, W-E-I-N-S-T-E-I-N, an HHS Medicare fraud inspector, worked on an audit of IMC in 1986. He is charged that IMC used Medicare funds to treat wounded Contras at its hospital. The transaction was arranged by IMC official Jose Basulto, B-A-S-U-L-T-O, a right-wing Cuban trained by the CIA, who arranged for Contras to receive treatment in Miami. Basulto was praised for his commitment by Felix Rodriguez. Quote, he has been active for a decade in supporting the Nicaraguan freedom fighters ever since the Sandinistas took power and is constantly organizing Contra support among Miami's Cuban community. He has even been to Contra camps in Central America, helping to dispense humanitarian aid, unquote. And skipping down, Riqueri's links to the mafia also raised eyebrows in Washington. Quote, As far back as the 1960s, he had ties with reputed racketeers who had operated out of pre-Castro Cuba and who later forged an anti-Castro alliance with the CIA, unquote, the Wall Street Journal reported. That, again, from Radio Free America number 37, the October 11th, 1992 installment of SAME. Perhaps the Ricchieri case offers a clue as to how George W. is going to reform Medicare. In For the Record program number 181, I relate a heroic piece of research and a remarkable piece of research done by former LAPD narcotics investigator Mike Rupert in connection with Daniel Hopsiger, who was researching a book about Barry Seal. Barry Seal was one of the top Iran-Contra-related drug smugglers with connections to organized crime and to the Central Intelligence Agency. And in his October 31st, 1999 installment of, or issue, I should say, of From the Wilderness, Mike Rupert's newsletter, which can be accessed on his website at COPVCIA, Mike Rupert discussed this particular article. The article is entitled, Why is George W. Flying in Drug Smuggler Barry Seal's Plane? Again, from the Wilderness Newsletter, October 31st, 1999. In For the Record program number 181, I interviewed Mike Rupert about this connection.
Well, going back to about June of this year, Terry Reed, author Terry Reed, who was a pilot connected to Barry Seal, and his book, Compromised, has been a bestseller, was in Los Angeles and made some public statements that during the 2000 presidential campaign, a videotape was likely going to surface showing that in 1985, after receiving some information, the FBI and DEA set up a sting to videotape two wealthy people coming into Tamiami Airport, that's a private airport outside of Miami, Florida, to pick up a couple kilos of cocaine. And Barry Seal provided the cocaine for that sting. But as it turned out, to everyone's surprise and chagrin, the two people turning up to pick up the cocaine were George W. Bush and Jeb Bush flying in on a Beech King Air 200 turboprop from Texas. And I have basically been working, trying to track down that sting and the location of that videotape for some time now. I've uncovered several sources who confirm that the sting took place. Haven't been able to find the tape. A lot of people are very much afraid for their lives, but I kept looking around for evidence of anything that would tie George W. to this, and this was how we began to look for tail numbers. And one particular tail number, as we were in this, November 6308 Foxtrot, or 08 Foxtrot as we call it, turned out, in fact, to be a Beech King Air 200. And this was a Beech King Air 200, that, and this number was found in Barry Seal's records by his widow and given to Dan Hopsiger. What was interesting was that as soon as we ran a registry history, a title search on the King Air 200 08 Foxtrot, we found out that it is currently in the fleet of the State of Texas Aircraft Pooling Board, and the governor of Texas, George W. Bush, flies on that plane regularly today.
That from For the Record program 181. I would note that although the videotape of the alleged sting has never surfaced, that connection is the 08 Foxtrot connection is at this point etched in stone, and in turn the financing of that plane is inextricably linked with many of the savings and loan ripoffs and other related financial scandals. Again, Mike Rupert's From the Wilderness newsletter can be accessed or information about it on his website, copvcia.com. The For the Record interview number, For the Record program 181 that you just heard excerpted and the other tapes that you've heard excerpted and or alluded to are available from a tape duplication service called Spitfire. That's one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email mail at spitfirelist.com, and you can visit the Real Audio Equipped Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com with lengthy descriptions of the various programs available from Spitfire. The For the Record descriptions are footnoted beginning with number 233. That concludes For the Record program number 249, Bushwhacked, more about the political heritage of George W. Bush. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.